Welcome, everyone, to the ProWrestling.net All Access Podcast. My name is Chris Shore. Joining me, as always, is Jake Barnett. We are here for your WWE SmackDown audio review for the SmackDown that aired November the 30th, 2012, taped on the 27th. And is it Bossier City, Louisiana, Jake? Is that how it's pronounced, you know?
That's how I'd guess, but I'm not from the area, so I'd hate to butcher it. But, yeah, that'd be my guess.
Yeah, I was going to say, if I said that wrong and you're from that area, I apologize. I'm guessing based upon how it's spelled. But at any rate, Jake and I, no matter what city it's in, Jake and I are usually here for you guys every week to provide this audio review of WWE SmackDown show. But it's not the only audio produced on the site each week. And right now, you've got a great opportunity if you want to check out this audio because we have a major sale going on. We've got a WWE Raw review done every week by Jason Powell. Will Pruitt comes along and does a TNA Impact Wrestling audio review, usually on Fridays. Jake and Will get together every week for the .NET Countdown, where they look at the best and the worst in professional wrestling for the week. Jason Powell does a Q&A audio where members can ask both wrestling and non-wrestling questions alike. I kind of fill in with audio around the spots. Next week I'll be doing an interview with a senior program developer for the WWE 13 game from THQ. And there'll be some interesting stuff going on with that as well, along as a promotional thing for that. And then, of course, Jason and I get together every Thursday for our flagship audio show. We call it .NET Weekly. We look at all the news of the week, often break news that hasn't made its way to the site yet. And all that audio is available to you as a .NET member. And, again, you can sign up right now as a member and get access for $6 off the regular price if you take one of our two options. You can get a six-month option or an annual option, both of which will take $6 off your membership fee, and you'll get access to all of that audio as well as the ad-free version of the site and our .NET member forum and .NET member blog section. Longtime listeners know the blog has had a recent update, or excuse me, the forum has had a recent update, and it's much more interactive now. We've got a betting scheme going on where you can bet .NET dollars that you earn through posting and whatnot, and people really liking that. There's just a lot of neat stuff going on in the forums right now, so saving money will get you all the way through WrestleMania season, no matter which one of those you choose. It's a perfect time to sign up to be a .NET member, or hey, the holiday season, give one to your wrestling fan and your friends, you know, amongst your friends or family, and that'll be a great treat for them. So head on over to ProWrestling.net, and right at the top of the page, you'll find the link for how to get the .NET cyber sale that's going on right now. It's extended for a few more days, so go ahead and check that out. But let's talk about WWE SmackDown. Jake, again, was taped on the 27th of November in Bossier City, Louisiana, and we've got TLC coming up, and they did a little bit for TLC throughout this show, but it seemed to me that primarily this show kind of happened not outside of storylines. They played into a lot of the storylines that are going on, but it didn't seem like the purpose of this show was to promote TLC so much. It seemed like this just kind of happened, and they kept all the people who were connected near each other. But I didn't see a whole lot of storyline advancement, did you?
No, it kind of treaded water in that regard. I mean, they had a couple of promos that allowed them to get in some more material, expand the story a little bit in a couple of cases. But for the most part, I mean, it seems like they're holding off on major story advancement for Mondays. And once in a while we get something on main event with a longer match or something. But yeah, this show has been where storylines go to tread water for a couple of weeks now.
Yeah, and John Cena made an appearance on SmackDown, a rare appearance on SmackDown. It'd be interesting to see if he does anything for the rating. The rating hasn't been terrible. It's been down from the highs that it had for such a long time, but holding pretty steady in the high 1.8 mark. Sometimes it gets down but below that, but it's been holding roughly around that point. I think the long average for it is right around 1.8, so not been doing terrible numbers on Sci-Fi, but I'm interested to see if Cena brings in any additional viewers because of that. And he opened up the show, but the problem is, I guess, even with Cena being there, is that it really wasn't hyped all that well. There wasn't much of anything on Monday. I didn't see anything on Wednesday pointing towards SmackDown. And I'm very confused by this, Jake. I don't understand. Yes, SmackDown is the B show. There's no question about that. But it is their show. You would think they would do a better job of promoting and hyping what's going to be on the show each week. But even when we get something on Raw, it's usually lip service, and more often than not, it's the question of who won the championship after they've already shown the whoever the world champion is coming out of the pay-per-view on Raw. So why do you think they're not? I guess there's no real answer to that question. Jason and I have talked about this many times, but I'm just kind of curious as to your opinion. But again, there's nothing really newsworthy. We try to start off each of these shows with whatever the big newsworthy event of the show is. There really wasn't one on this show. So, what do you think is the reason why SmackDown is being overlooked so much, certainly as it pertains to advertising on Raw? Because, again, Main Event gets a ton of advertising on Raw.
Yeah, I think the three-hour Raw, the addition of Main Event, they stretch out that creative energy that much farther, and I think we see SmackDown often get the short end of that draw, on Fridays, just due to the fact that there's just so much to do for the creative teams. And on Monday's Raw, I mean, a perfect example, and Jason mentioned this in his report, they replay the same promo for SmackDown from the week before that tried to call into question whether or not Big Show or Sheamus was still champion, more than a week after the pay-per-view and after they'd already kind of continued the advancement of that storyline on the previous SmackDown episode. So, I don't know if that was just a production mistake or what happened there, but it really does seem like WWE treats SmackDown as almost a C-show. Main Event has really kind of taken a lot of their creative mind share, and SmackDown is kind of left with the scraps. I mean, we often get some good matches, but at the same time, they're usually disconnected from storyline advancement too. So it's it really is a wrestling show that doesn't appear to have a direction and a focus right now. It's kind of a shame.
And there were so many times we've talked about this so many times before where SmackDown was the better wrestling show than Raw was. And there was a lot of wrestling on this show tonight. We had three really long matches, if you look at it, in the opening and at the half-hour break, or excuse me, the hour break, and then, of course, the main event. I didn't watch the show live. I was working an indie show last night. You don't have the time here for the last one. But, I mean, it was longer than say, the other two-minute matches that were on the show. So, I mean, there was a lot of wrestling here. I don't want to make it sound like that's changed, but it seemed like a show that just happened. It felt like a big house show on some level as opposed to an actual television show because it just put people together. It was like, oh, Ziggler and Cena have a program going on, so we'll have Ziggler attack Cena, and then Cena complain about it and nothing else. It was just really strange. They just put people together long enough to remind everybody, hey, they've got a marriage going on that you can follow, but not here. Is almost what it seemed like. I don't know. When SmackDown stops getting, good coverage, and it has for some time, like you said, even this week, they went so far as to replay the same commercial that they played after the pay-per-view last week, and then when you actually get to SmackDown and it's kind of just, oh, look, here's a bunch of wrestlers, I'm not saying that the show's in any trouble of going where anything crazy like that, but it does make you wonder, why even bother? Why are they even dealing with this? And, why do they continue to put this on? Obviously, it's a programming fee, but it just seems a little bit disingenuous from them as a company to put this show out and not give it any hype and not really do much with it. Some weeks they do, but more often than not, it seems like we come on and start the show by saying, did anything get advanced this week? And the answer, tragically, is no. But we will go through the show, nevertheless. We'll endeavor to pick apart the pieces that we can and plug some things together. We get the WWE narrator opening up the show recapping some of the things that have been going along. John Cena's music hits right out of the gates, and he makes his ring entrance. He got a good reaction from the crowd. Cena comes out and cuts a promo where he says that he woke everybody to SmackDown. He got the cheap pop and whatnot. Cena started talking about Ziggler. He said that Ziggler's been up to business, and now he was out there to point the finger back at him. He said Ziggler's greatest accomplishment was his 122nd title reign, and that without the briefcase, he has no identity. He continued to run Ziggler down and said that Ziggler wasn't in a match tonight. He was in a fight because in your main event, it was going to be Dolph Ziggler versus Sheamus, The crowd popped big for that. I don't know why since Cena out to make that announcement. That just, I don't know, struck me as weird. But Alberto Rio's music hits at that point. He comes out and says, oh, Cena, last time you were here, you lost to me, and you need to get out of my ring. Del Rio had made it all the way into the ring at this point, so Cena, he needed to get out of his ring. How was it exactly they said? He goes, I need you to get out of this ring right now. Cena said that all those things were true that Del Rio said. He remembered all those things, but he couldn't leave because he had a match with Del Rio right now and attacked him. And that led us into our first match of the, actually went to commercial at that point. Del Rio escaped, obviously. They went to commercial. So we'll break that down first. I mean, you know, it was Cena. It typical Cena here. It was neither great nor, you know, it's the bad Cena that we can get. It was just uninspired, unimpressive Cena. It's really weird the way they used him to announce the main event. I mean, it works, but it just seemed an odd way to do it to me. What'd you think?
Yeah, I thought this was kind of a wasted opportunity. You know, they have this relatively interesting feud going with Dolph Ziggler. I mean, you know, there were parts of the whole AJ story leading up to this point that were kind of nauseating. But I think, you know, once they got Cena and Ziggler involved physically, it has become more interesting. And they have been kind of exploring new portions of John Cena's kind of character and personality. You know, he kind of kept his feelings about AJ a secret. And then all of a sudden, you know, they're revealed. So, you know, it's kind of the first time Cena potentially may have lied to his audience. And then they send him out here to do these promos, and he's still, you know, Super Cena, you know, the shell, you know, the impermeable Captain America kind of facade that he puts on when he's out there doing the superhero stuff. And, you know, I guess, you know, you got to do that for the kids because they love it, but there was nothing in this promo that you had touched on, any of that stuff. And for me, as somebody who is kind of tired of the Super Cena character, I thought, you know, that was kind of a waste, because I think they do have something interesting they can explore with him, and then it wasn't even touched on here. Maybe they'll get to that on Monday, but it just seemed like, you know, an opening show promo, you know, he goes out there and does his shtick, announces the main event, and you know, then he punches Del Rio, and that was basically 15 minutes of the show, or at least 10, so... you know, it just seemed like a waste of time, and it was kind of boring to me.
Yeah, it was, sorry about that. There was I don't know, it was just, like you said, it was kind of a wasted opportunity. It didn't stink or anything like that. It just kind of, okay. You know, when it was over, I don't know. It was Cena had an opportunity there to put a little extra something on his match with Ziggler, or what we assume will be his match with Ziggler at TLC. I know they haven't announced it yet. Yes, they just, you know, wrestled on Monday, but I mean, the fact that they're still talking about it, all signs point to these two locking it up at TLC. And we heard from local advertising that it'll be a tables match, which makes sense. That's how Sheamus beat Cena very early in his career and won the championship. So, I mean, it's, you know, it's a good cover for Cena to take a loss without actually having to take a serious loss. But, yeah, I don't know. He didn't really do much. He put Ziggler off on Sheamus for the night, and that was it. Like I said, and then it was the punch Del Rio. So a little bit of a wasted opportunity there, but that did lead to our first match of the night. John Cena defeating Alberto Del Rio in 16 minutes and 14 seconds. No attitude adjustment or STF finish on this. I was kind of surprised. Cena was sitting on the top rope, and Del Rio kicked him down into the Tree of Woe. He backed up and charged at Cena for a spear-type move, but Cena sat up at the last second. Del Rio hits the post, staggers out. Cena climbs back up to the top rope and hits that famouser from the top rope for the win. And then post-match, he goes to celebrate up the ramp and got hit behind from Ziggler. He was backing up the ramp, playing to the fans. Ziggler runs out, hits him with the briefcase, was knocked out there with Ziggler standing over top of him. Good visual moment for Ziggler, certainly, going forward. The match itself was pretty good. You know, Del Rio can work, and we know that Cena, if you put him in there with the right guy, is a better hand than I think most people give him credit for. He's not a guy who's going to carry someone, but he's a lot like Kane in that, because Kane's a much higher level, I think, in this respect. that, you know, he's a guy that's easy to sleep on because you see him so much and because he can't carry other people. You're reminded of that. You put him in there with a guy who can work with him and kind of play to his strength. And he can have some great matches. We've seen him with Punk. We've seen him with HBK. And here, another good match. Not a great match, but a good match with Del Rio. 16-minute match of television time. And, you know, it was a good match, but again, kind of meaningless and pointless. And Del Rio takes another loss. I mean, he almost needs to fall back to the mid-card on some level because he needs to be rebuilt a little bit at this point. I thought they were trying to rebuild him, but it's always starts and stops with WWE when it comes to their heels.
Yeah, it sure seems like it. And, you know, I give Del Rio a lot of credit. I think he's done wonders with what they've given him for a character and how many losses he's had to take. I mean, it's kind of amazing to me that he maintains the level of heat that he does get. But I think that, you know, it's a credit to his charisma and his ability to connect in the right way as a heel with the audience. But, yeah, it's another clean loss for him. I actually did kind of like the finish. They didn't, they didn't drag out the AA or the SCF. You know, it kind of felt like it was somewhat surprising. You know, it didn't feel like it was, just the same old finish. We could see it forever from Cena. So that part of it I enjoyed. It was a confident, match. That both guys looked pretty good. Del Rio got in a fair amount of offense throughout, but he ends up taking the loss. It was a good match, but, nothing to get terribly excited about. There wasn't a whole lot of storyline involvement here. And Cena picks up another win, which I guess, could have been predicted just based on the way he started the show.
Yeah, I mean, I think everybody had that in mind. The what I did like about it, certainly the finish, like you just said, was the fact that it wasn't AA, it wasn't STF. He hit him with a top rope move, and it usually, it's one of his signature moves, if you will, but, I don't think I've ever seen him put anybody away with it. He did it here. It's smart to do things like this. It was one of the things we're talking about, for example, in the indie show I was working last night. They had an I Quit match. They put a table in the ring, set it up in the corner, never used it. And that was great. People were watching that table the whole time going, well, this can't be the finish because they haven't broken the table yet. And they never used the table. And that sort of thing, just like this, where Cena wins with a different move than we're used to seeing, will only help the next match. You know, it's these sorts of things that you have to do. One of the things when I was a kid watching the NWA here in the South, that was something that they always did. They would win with small packages a lot. They would win with a move that you necessarily wouldn't expect to win sometimes, so you weren't always looking for that finisher. And then when that finisher was hit, it was, oh, my God, it's over. You know, that guy hit his finisher, and he didn't even have to do that to win. So smart move here by having Cena do that. I doubt it's here for the stay for the long haul, but still a good move on WWE's part by having him win in a different manner. Backstage, Matthews and JBL set up footage of Kane and Daniel Bryan getting beat up by the Shield, and they cut backstage to where Kofi was standing in between Team Hell No as those two glared at each other. Kofi asked if they were all going to be able to get along, or if those two were going to be able to get along for their six-man tag match. And at this point, Daniel Bryan and Kane started putting each other over. Daniel Bryan said something about Kane being the most dangerous monster in WWE history, and Kane said Bryan was the most the best submission specialist in WWE history or something like that. They were real intense to kind of yelling at each other. But Kane closed off by saying, if you want to know, can we get along tonight? The answer is yes. And then Daniel Bryan said yes. And then they started chanting yes. And they walked off chanting yes as Kofi was standing there scratching his head. I'm not trying to preview their match, but then they went on to have a serious component to their match. That means they're done, right, Jake? I mean, if these guys are no longer hating on each other, they're about to break them up.
Yeah, I think I said that in my report in my thoughts about the match. I figured, these guys are taking each other seriously again. That means the whole thing blows up in a few weeks. So that's kind of what I'm expecting here. And I think it's time. I mean, they had a pretty good run with what they were able to do with the comedy aspect of it. But, I think it has grown stale, and they've kind of ran out of ideas on what to do with them. So I think we see one of the actual tag teams, whether it be, the primetime players or whoever else, end up picking up the belts here pretty soon. And I hope they don't go back to a Kane and Bryan feud right away, because I think
seen that too much already. But, you know, it seems like it's about time, and I think they're starting to indicate that now.
From there, with commercial, we came back. Cena was backstage. Booker T. Cena was raging about Ziggler attacking him from behind. He said, as soon as Ziggler, he goes, I'm glad I'm here tonight, because as soon as Ziggler shows up, bam, I'm going to blast him. Booker said that he needed to talk to him. He said that the ratings will suffer if the match doesn't happen. He begged Cena to back down. Cena finally agreed to let it happen and shook his head, not satisfied with this. But he agreed to let it go. And then we went straight to the ring where Great Khali and David Otunga are standing for our second match. Great Khali squashing David Otunga in 1:15. And as you put in your report, why, my answer would be they had 2 minutes to fill. They had to do something.
Yeah, that's basically it. I mean, it was the most pointless thing. I mean, we had a chop, and then Otunga ends up on the outside on the floor, and then Hornswoggle sat on him, and then he chased Hornswoggle around the ring like some kind of Benny Hill bit, and then Khali hit another chop after he dragged him back in the ring and pinned him. I mean, literally, it was a little more than a minute, and I don't even know if that would necessarily qualify as a match. I mean, it was just the most bizarre thing. It was completely disconnected from the rest of the show. And it seemed like it was only there so they could have Hornswoggle and Khali dance like morons, because that's basically, that took up as much time as the actual match itself.
I guess the plus, if there is one, of having Khali and Hornswoggle together is that it knocks them both out in one shot. You know, it's at the very least, if you're going to have them, and I don't think we can get rid of them, we've established that a long time ago, but if you're going to have these comedy acts, then get them all together and have one comedy act, and there you go, and take up as little time. So if the choices are have Khali and Hornswoggle a little or have Hornswoggle and Khali a lot, then, you know, this is at least a hit in that sense, right?
I guess so. You know, they aren't quite the oddities that that were a hit back in the Attitude Era, but yeah, getting them together at least cuts their TV time in half, right? I guess that's got to be
a
plus.
That's my thought. Is at least they're we get them all, we wrap them all up together, put them out there, and then we're done. we got plug for the 6-man match after the commercial break. Barrett Primetime Player is already in the ring. Team Hell No and Kofi, too many K's there, make their ring entrance. For our third match of the night, it was Team Hell No and Kofi Kingston defeating Wade Barrett, the Primetime Players, at 14:35. Very good tag match here, one worth sitting through. Finish on this comes when, as it does in all tag matches, all hell breaks loose. Everybody ends up in the ring. Kofi Kingston takes out, it was Titus and Wade Barrett, sends them to the outside. Young dives off the top rope for Kane, but gets caught by the throat. Kane hits his choke slam. He tags in Daniel Bryan, who does the diving headbutt, and then locks in the no lock, or whatever it is he's calling it this week, for the submission. Just a solid tag team match, a 6-man match. I mean, anytime you get more than 4 people in the ring, there's certain limitations and things like. But they worked well within the structure here, and it was a fun match. And I mean, I think it's worth sitting through, don't you?
Yeah, definitely. If you got the time to sit through the tag match, I definitely think it's worth it. It's one of the better 6-mans we've seen on SmackDown, and it got some pretty good time. You know, it's rare that we see these multiple tag matches last more than 5-6 minutes. They seem to break down pretty quickly early. But they got some decent storyline in here. They didn't develop Barrett and Kofi much, but the time they spent in the ring looked pretty good. It seemed like this was more about, Team Hell No and them gelling as a team, and I think they pulled that off well. And Brian picking up the submission victory after Kane tagged him rather than tagging himself in, I think it's supposed to be another sign that they're starting to work together, which, again, probably means they're done in a couple of weeks.
It's a shame. It's they're working great together. They're going to be split up. What a shame. You never know. It might be a swerve. They might lose the title and that prove that they shouldn't work together. They should be, jerks to each other, and so they go back to doing it. So don't ever discount that as a possibility. Definitely sit through this match if you get a chance. And, with Kofi and Barrett, they put him in the ring a little bit. They didn't do too too much, which is smart. They're going to be facing each other at the pay-per-view. You don't want to give it away here. But what they did, and not that this was any real surprise, I think, to either of us, but what it did show was that that would probably be a pretty good match come TLC. I mean, that could be one to watch. And I think that they have done a good job of setting this up. We haven't really seen a good Intercontinental title feud for a while. And even though, you know, I think Barrett is above the Intercontinental title on some level, I think he's bringing real interest to this feud. And he's going to, you know, even if he loses here and ultimately in this feud, or even if he wins, I think that there's a real possibility of everybody coming out of that feud better than they were going in. Like I said, I don't think Kofi needs the loss, but I do think that if they do this right, Kofi can come out of this better than he was going in. I mean, do you think that's possible?
Yeah, you know, and I think they are trying to, you know, establish a mid-card here. And, you know, it seems like, you know, Cesaro is starting to do at least, you know, getting some focus on television. He's had some, you know, some decent exposure on Raw and on Main Event. And, you know, he still gets the occasional appearance on SmackDown. And Kofi's obviously had great matches, you know, including the one with The Miz on Main Event and other things. So I think they are trying to build some semblance of a competitive division for those mid-card titles. And you know, having Barrett go after Kofi, and even if Kofi takes a loss here, I mean, if he's able to look tough against Barrett, there's no reason that feud couldn't continue. And I think both men would benefit from it greatly.
Let's see. After that, we get backstage with Sheamus and Matt Stryker, or as you called him, Austin Aries Jr. Stryker,
yeah,
with his new look. I had hoped the mustache was just there for Movember, but looks like that might be here to stay, or at least the facial hair on Stryker is here to stay. What a tragic thing that is. But Sheamus, you know, he gave us his kind of basic promo, saying that all opponents like Big Show in the ring, and that didn't bode well for Ziggler, and blah, 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 blah. he put he ate a big spoonful of Lucky Charms. I mean, this was an upsetting promo for me because I thought it twisted too far back to the, as I call him, and as you referenced here, the Lucky Charms Sheamus, the guy who's out there, a little too happy-go-lucky for me. I mean, he tried to be intense, but it was like intensity with comedy. I don't like this. I don't like that version of Sheamus. I don't like the comedy at all from him, the silliness at all from him. I really think that he is more of a character that gets over approaching it as a Stone Cold type character. I'm not trying to compare him to Steve Austin or saying he needs to copy Steve Austin, but Austin, you know, didn't go out and play to the fans in a yuck sort of way. He just did his thing and beat people up, and that's what started it. And then he could go out there and do anything, and they would pop for it. So it's, you know, and Sheamus doesn't have that yet. He's trying too hard. I think just be the big bad Irishman and beat people up and do the babyface things with saving people and not taking shortcuts and all that sort of stuff, and then it just happens naturally. You don't have to try this hard.
Yeah, you know, and I mentioned in my report last week, and we didn't get a chance to chat about it due to some scheduling conflicts, but it seems like there's kind of two Sheamuses, and he doesn't have a whole lot of range. There's the very intense, almost supernaturally violent kind of Sheamus who, you know, is just kind of a machine out there. And then the other end of the spectrum is the Lucky Charms kind of salesman who kind of creeps into these promos where he just smiles through the whole thing, and it takes away from some of the seriousness of the words that are coming out of his mouth, because it doesn't look like he's sincere when he's talking about beating people up. And there's not a whole lot in between. I mean, we haven't seen Sheamus kind of develop that range where it seems like he has more than two, emotional states where, he's like a manic depressive where he's either way too happy or he's just way down in violence. And I wish we'd get something in between, because I think that's the character he needs to hit. Because like you mentioned with Steve Austin, who managed to kind of strike the balance of comedy and seriousness, where he could kind of flip that switch and people would immediately know the difference. I don't think that's necessarily the case with Sheamus. That's something he still needs to work on.
Like I said, I do think that that Austin earned that right. It's not like he just went out there and was funny. It was he earned it by being a badass, and people loved it and fell for his character. And there's a lot of things going on there, obviously, with McMahon and all that. I mean, it was great storytelling. Don't get me wrong, but it's when he did start doing some more tongue in cheek sort of stuff, especially towards the end, he could get away with it because he was Steve Austin. And I think Sheamus can maybe ultimately move into that point. It's just now he went from the total badass that we like as a heel, and we thought, when he first made his babyface turn, we were like, okay, the crowd really turned him, and he just was continuing to play the same character. We just needed a little bit of tweaks around the edges. They didn't tweak him. They just turned him around and went, go out there and tell stories about, the Blarney Stone, whatever else. I don't get it. It's so frustrating. We talk about it every week, I know, but I think the reason why this is especially frustrating is the past couple of weeks, it looked like, after Big Show beat him and he kind of blew that off, and then he got beat again, it became this idea of maybe he's going back that way. Maybe he's going to find his edge again. And so when we see him jump back the other way, it's like, oh, God dang it. But we get the video recap again of Team Hell No and Ryback getting attacked by the Shield. I guess we got the rest of the video. And then had their interview session with Michael Cole kind of laid over top of it to explain what they did. Really cool video. Not surprising in the least. WWE has these really neat videos. Real quick before we move on, do you like where they are with the Shield right now? I personally hate the name. But I really liked their interview there that they did with Cole on Monday. I thought that Ambrose reminded me exactly how good he is on the mic. Seth Rollins impressed me in his improvement on the microphone. He was getting good towards the end of Ring of Honor, but still a little bit flat. Here I thought he seemed very comfortable. Not as comfortable as Ambrose, who just looked like he was just having a chat. But Rollins was good here, and Reigns did what he was supposed to do. Not as impressed with the ending. It wasn't anything bad there, didn't take anything away, but to me it was like I would have let that promo stand on its own. But what did you think of what they did with him on Monday?
Yeah, I mean, I thought the ending of the show, kind of muddied the waters a bit, and I guess that maybe was the point, because they overlaid the promo over the attack on Kane and Bryan and Ryback making the save on Monday, and it kind of called into question their state of motivations, and obviously that was their intention, and it made sense, but I think it was absolutely important that they kept those guys backstage for that promo, because I don't think Rollins and Reigns especially are particularly ready to give a long promo in front of a live audience. I'm not sure they could go minutes. There's a backstage area with the ability for multiple takes and for them to rehearse things and everything like that. I think that plays into their wheelhouse right now. And maybe they're more mature on the mic than I think, but I think it was the right decision to do it backstage. And I hope when they do put him out in front of the camera, they just have Ambrose do most of the talking, because he has that, he seems like he's doing a little bit of method acting. And I guess the closest I can get to another wrestling character that he reminds me of, and Will and I talked about this on Wednesday, was Roddy Piper. I think he definitely kind of exudes that kind of confidence, and he should be the mouthpiece for that group. And maybe the other guys can talk more as they come into their own on the microphone. But they have something here, and I like it. And depending on where they go from here, I think it could get a lot more interesting or a lot less. If they bungle it up, but what they've done so far has my interest anyway.
Yeah, for those of you who are not familiar with Ambrose, look him up as John Moxley on YouTube. I don't know how many promos he's got out there on YouTube. Don't watch his matches. He was capable. He's still very green when he was working with Dragon Gate USA before he signed with WWE. But he was capable. He could get it done enough in the ring. He could hang with some of those guys enough to put on interesting and exciting matches, but his talent is on the microphone. He is absurd with his comfort. I watched him turn an entire city of Burlington, entire town of Burlington against him one night when Dragon Gate came here locally. I mean, he just It's been so long since I've seen him, too, I just kind of forgot how good he was. And then, like you said, he does have that Piper tendency. Jason mentioned that Thursday in .NET Weekly. He kind of he screams that kind of persona. So definitely check out some of his old stuff. And we'll see what happens with Rollins and Reigns. Still, I thought Rollins was really good in what he did, and Reigns did what he needed to do. He said just enough to show that he wasn't mute and didn't try to do too much and show that he was weak on the mic in any way. So I really was digging what they were doing, what they did with him Monday night. But after this, we get Damian Sandow, who comes to the ring. He said he's not going to give up on his personal quest to educate people, but he was no longer going to focus on the masses. He said he would do it with individual audience members one at a time. He picked someone from the crowd to be his apprentice, had him come to the ring, and said he had three questions for him. The first question was, how many wheels are on a tricycle? Second question was, how often does the United States have presidential elections? Which there are people who cannot answer that question, I'm just saying. And then the last one was, what is the orbital velocity of Jupiter's moon Europa? The guy just kind of looked at Sandow and said he didn't know. Sandow, you know, chewed him out, scolded him. He told him that he was an embarrassment to his family and the entire state of Louisiana, and that he should leave the country for good to save everyone. He did his thank you bit and went into commercial. I love this guy. I have from the moment he cut his first promo. This is not a main event act, don't get me wrong, but this is a great act. It is certainly a U.S. title, intercontinental title act, and I think it can launch him forward into something bigger and better down the road, and it does look like WWE has high hopes for him.
Yeah, I really enjoyed this. I thought it was a lot of fun. You know, it definitely kind of reminded me of something a little more old school, you know, something that would be normally maybe reserved for house shows or something with the audience participation, whether that guy was a plant or not. I mean, most likely that he was, but, you know, it was very charismatic, and I thought Sandow came off very well, and then the crowd bought into the whole thing. He got, you know, just mega heat at the end when he started ripping on Louisiana a bit, and, you know, it was a good launching pad for him, and I hope they give him a little bit of a reboot here now that he's been kind of separated from Rhodes due to that unfortunate injury. He definitely stands out as a guy that would excel in singles competition, and I'm not happy that Rhodes got hurt, but I'm happy that Sandow is getting another opportunity here.
Just get rid of those pink tights. You've got to get rid of those pink tights. They're awful looking on him. But, yeah, and for people who want to go, but sure, you say you hate the silly, over-the-top cartoony characters. No, I don't like the cartoony characters. I don't like, you know, characters that have, like, it's like even with, the Rock, who I think is great, it always bugged me that he's the Rock. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's all, you know, Triple H, that's always bugging Mankind, those sorts of things. Those are little things, but it was the big, just cartoony characters, the characters that look like they belong in a cartoon. He's over the top here, and I understand why people wouldn't like him, but I think he focuses it very well, and I like what he's doing. And again, I think it shows, at the very least, it shows that he has the potential on the mic to, and he's good enough in the ring that once he's done with this gimmick, he has the ability to take the next step. They'll probably screw it up along the way like they did with everybody else, but he at least has the ability to go through that process and hopefully make his way up to the top of the card. I think it's coming. After the commercial break, he did wrestle Tyson's kid, fourth match of the night, defeated him in 2 minutes and 30 seconds. Actually ended up on the outside of the ring. Kid tossed Sandow back in first and attempted the springboard elbow when he came back in, but Sandow got the knees up and then hit his straitjacket neckbreaker for the win. He doesn't have a name for that yet. I mean, they call it a straitjacket neckbreaker, but that's because of the setup. I haven't heard a name yet for it. I mean, he's got a name for his elbow and the cartwheel and all the other stuff, but not for his finisher, or at least, have you heard of one?
You know, I've never heard it said out loud. I mean, I don't know. I'd have to go back and watch some of the stuff in FCW. Maybe it had a name there, and they just haven't announced it on WWE TV yet, but they definitely know, you know, they call out the elbow at his saying and the cartwheel and stuff like that, but nothing for the finisher that I've noticed.
I apologize for my voice trying to cut out on me here. We'll make it through. We get the John Cena Make-A-Wish video. You know, just real quick, I don't want to spend any time on this, but like you put in your report, I understand if you hate the character. I understand if you want him to go away. I don't understand if you want him to get injured. That kind of drives me nuts when people say that. But I am as done with John Cena the character as the next person, I promise you. this sort of thing, you just get to pass on. You know, I worked a benefit show not too long ago. It was an amazing thing to do. It was a great experience. That kid was awesome. And for Cena to do this all the time, it's, like I said, the only thing that's granted more wishes than John Cena is Disney World. And that's pretty rare company. So I the guy gets a pass on this. It's just awesome that he's willing to do this all the time. And kids love him for it. I mean, he is their hero. Backstage, Dolph Ziggler is interviewed by Matt Stryker. He claims that Monday wasn't a loss, that the loss of Cena wasn't really a loss because AJ's presence made it a handicap match. That was a pretty good line. He called Cena a liar for hiding what he did with AJ, said that tonight would be no different with Cena lurking backstage, and Cena can't be trusted, even though he promised Booker T he wouldn't get involved. He expected him to be there. Ziggler called himself the show-off, the show-stealer, and the sole survivor, and said he was sick of being so sick. He called out Sheamus and said that when he was out in the ring tonight, he wouldn't be looking at Big Show, referencing that Sheamus said that everybody looked like Big Show to him. He said, you won't be looking at Big Show. What you will be looking at is the next World Heavyweight Champion. Ziggler suddenly learned how to talk on the mic. I mean, he's had some time, and it's not always been impressive, but he's making, like, huge leaps and bounds. It seems like every time they give him the mic, he's exponentially better than last time.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it's, you know, if it's just confidence, kind of boosting his game here or what, but he's definitely hitting on all cylinders right now, in the ring, on the microphone. He's really kind of rising to the occasion of being in a major feud, with Cena here. And it's nice to see because I think he's ready for the main event, and I would not at all be surprised to see him cash in that briefcase relatively soon and become the World Heavyweight Champion. I mean, if there's a guy that appears to be on a faster rise in the WWE, I can't think of him.
Yeah, I think that I think we've got a real good chance of seeing the title change at TLC with the chairs being able to play into that factor. And if we don't see it there, I just personally tend to think we won't see it until after WrestleMania. I could be wrong about that, but. And it would be, you'd kind of wonder why you wouldn't cash in at WrestleMania if you have that briefcase and being able to main event and that sort of thing. But I don't know. I tend to think if we don't see it here, then it's going to be a while still before we see it. He technically has until, what, June, July? When is Money in the Bank? June, isn't it?
I want to say July. I think it's July.
All right. So he's still got plenty of time, but we'll see what happens with that. But again, good promo from Ziggler. Check it out. If you're not sold on the guy on the microphone, this might be the one that does you in. Back to the ring. Usos make their ring entrance, and then, oh my God, it's 3MB. Our fifth match of the night. 3MB defeats the Usos at 4 minutes and 32 seconds. It was Slater and Jinder Mahal were the two members of 3MB, and Drew McIntyre on the floor. I didn't notice. I did close up just every time this gimmick comes on. My eyes are so busy rolled up in the back of my head, I can't see well sometimes. Does McIntyre still have the cast on?
No, not that I saw.
Okay, all right. So McIntyre back. Of course, he was off recently with the passing of his mother, and still thoughts and prayers for him and his family. But Jinder Mahal wins this by hitting his finisher. They celebrate, do the big dance off, and the guitar. I can't. It's so bad, Jake. It's so, so bad.
Yeah, it's really awful. Like I put in my report, and I still stand by this, that I think, they're going for so bad it's funny, but they don't have enough charisma between those three guys to actually pull that off. Like, it's not tongue-in-cheek enough to, in the performances to really pull off anything funny. So it's just really bad. Like you mentioned, it looks awful. Like Mahal looks like he would rather be anywhere else in the world while he's out there doing that stuff. It's just not a good gimmick for anybody involved. And the only one who hams it up enough to make you kind of smile a bit is Slater. The other two just look like they're ready to go backstage and absorb their cyanide caplets and call it a career.
Yeah, the best comparison I can make for this gimmick is Brodus Clay's Funkasaurus gimmick, which did win me over. I'm over it now. I'm done with it now. But I hated it from the beginning, and he won me over. But I think the difference between the two, ultimately, is that Brodus went out there and just brought into it. Like, I mean, he and that's what won me over. He just went out there and laid it out, and this is my thing, this is who I am, I am the Funkasaurus, and you're going to like me, damn it, whether you want to or not, and it worked. I mean, he put his heart and his soul into the act, and you just kind of had to go along with it. Whether you wanted to or not, he just won you over, and you make the point here that at least two of those guys, certainly Mahal, McIntyre's hair is long enough that when he's acting a fool, you can't really tell, but Mahal doesn't hide it very well. He just seems like, oh, I have to go play air guitar now. And, I mean, he plays it up a little bit, and I'm not trying to bash him or anything, but it's so plainly obvious that they're like, wow, I can't believe this is what we're doing. And maybe they came up with it. Maybe it's just coming across poorly on television, but I think that's the difference at the end of the day, say, between them and Brodus Clay, is that you believed Brodus was the Funkasaurus. You believe these guys are forced into this gig. Would that be fair?
Yeah, I mean, Brodus and the presentation for Brodus is so much better. I mean, he has the disco ball and the dancers and the pyro, and you know it's something that you could probably, at least from appearances, say, the WWE put some thought into, and Brodus put some energy into. And, you know, kids love that act. I mean, I think it's played out. But, I mean, you know, there's definitely an audience for Brodus Clay, and you know, he seems to be having a ball with it. So it's hard to really, you know, I don't like it. It's not for me. But, you know, there are people out there who still like that act. And with 3MP, I mean, you could tell, like, the first 30 seconds of that match, you could have heard, you know, somebody rustling with their popcorn in the front seats. I mean, there was just death in that arena. And you know, the Usos aren't over either. So, but you know, there's just no response for this thing. It's not over.
With the commercial, we had the video recap of Big Show having a hard time destroying the chair on Monday's Raw, which you said. We get the replay of Sheamus and Big Show from Raw on Monday. Dolph Ziggler makes his ring entrance, and after commercial, Sheamus is out for our sixth match of the night, final match. Sheamus defeating Dolph Ziggler by DQ. It was about 12 and a half minutes long. I looked it up. And we finish on this comes. You have Sheamus with Ziggler in the Texas Cloverleaf, but Big Show runs in and hits him to cause the DQ. Show and Ziggler team up, start beating up on Sheamus. Cena runs out, hits an AA on Ziggler. Both men hit shoulder blocks on Big Show to get him out of the ring, and then they hug and celebrate the big happy moment. Almost even, at that point, I was sitting there thinking, wow, why do they even have a dark match main event at this point? I mean, you know, you just sent the crowd home happy. Why do you even have to have another match at this point? But, yeah, I mean, they had the big babyface moment at the end. Cena did break his word and run out and hit Ziggler, but it was after the match. I'm sure that'll be his argument. I'm sure Vicky Guerrero will play it up on Monday. That'll be how that continues. I mean, the match itself was good. I agree with you when you said it felt like we had seen this before. We have. It was good, but it wasn't anything to get all jacked up and excited about. It's worth sitting through, obviously. I mean, both these guys can work. So, I mean, if you're looking for some wrestling to watch, you can do much, much worse this week than this match. But it wasn't a spectacular, you know, great main event. I thought the tag match, the six-man tag, was better. On some levels, I thought Cena and Del Rio was even better. So a good match, not a great match to close the show. Big babyface moment, send the crowd home happy and to close the show out. But again, not much. Again, it's just Sheamus and Big Show are in a feud. John Cena and Ziggler are in a feud, and when we got them all together here for this. But, you know, not much else. But we can probably expect to see a tag match either on Raw or SmackDown next week. What do you think of Cena and Sheamus versus Big Show and Dolph Ziggler?
Yeah, I would expect we'll get a tag match on one of the two shows, and you know it wasn't a terrible match. I mean, there's not a whole lot to pick on about it.
Right.
It just didn't feel particularly original, considering how much we've seen Ziggler get his teeth kicked out by Sheamus over the last couple of months. It just didn't feel any different than what we'd already seen. And, you know, if you haven't, been actively watching SmackDown and you haven't caught all those Sheamus and Ziggler matches, this one will probably be a lot of fun for you. But for somebody who really, who watches the show regularly, it just kind of felt like a repeat. But, you know, I don't dislike where they're going with either of these feuds, but it just kind of felt like it was just kind of tacked together. It wasn't,
It wasn't anything spectacular, and I'm sure we'll get more development out of it on Monday. But it was a pretty pedestrian effort from everybody involved here overall on the show. It didn't really feel like they moved anything forward. I mean, there were some good matches, but this was, like you said at the beginning, just kind of a show that treaded water.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. I didn't mean to. It came across as I was kind of picking apart that match, the main event. That's not my case. It was we know that those guys had the ability to go out there and wow. You know, that they had the ability to go out there and put on a match that's breathtaking that we opened the show with. Holy crap, did you see Sheamus versus Dolph Ziggler? They have that potential. And not that I think you give that away on TV either. I'm not necessarily supporting that idea. Just, you know, it was, I think if you're limited in time and you've seen these guys go before, I think you're better off looking at one of the previous two matches we talked about, the tag match or the opener, because this was good. They did all the right things. It was technically clean. There's a lot to like there. And like you said, if you've never seen them before, hell yeah, check this match out. You'll probably enjoy it. It was just a match. It ultimately is what it was. And this is the biggest problem with WWE when it comes to matches and certainly main events. Jason and I talked about this Thursday when we talked about Raw's main event. You know, they're the main event. They don't feel special. The show, WWE main event, what I like about it more than anything, and I am a person who is a fan of enhancement talent. I think that TV should start making a shift back to that idea of being more enhancement talent. In a lot of ways, they're doing that. They're just using, you know, Tyson Kidd and Zack Ryder and the primetime players as enhancement talent. But yet they're always kind of right on the edge, you think, of breaking out. And that's what's so frustrating. Get guys who you know are going to lose. So when you have those matches, it's like, oh, well, you know, we knew Tyson Kidd was probably going to lose to Damian Sandow, so why does it matter who's the guy that's in there? You know, I think that that's the case. But getting off track a little bit there, trying to rein it back in here, what main event does is not put necessarily great matches together, though they have, is that they make it feel like a big deal. They show those videos. They do the interviews often before and after the match. It tends to happen within its own world a little bit in that they will, you know, the challenge for next week's main event will come out of this week's show and as opposed to, you know, feeding off of Raw or something like that, even though they may tie into some of their storylines. The big thing that they do is they make it feel like a big deal, and, you know, they have that opportunity here, for example, with Sheamus and Ziggler, and they just don't make it feel like a big deal. They just put it out there and expect people to understand, which we do, but it's like, we get it, but it doesn't mean that it's good. It doesn't mean that we were entertained by it. It doesn't mean that they didn't, that they put on a great story. They did just enough, the bare minimum, to get by putting all these guys together in the same area and letting them throw a couple of punches, when they could have done so much more. Am I off base here at all?
No, yeah, I think you're absolutely right. Spent a lot of time, kind of grinding down a lot of the mid-card talent by putting them in situations where they're almost guaranteed to lose. And a lot of times it's the guys that they also expect to carry other people down the card.
Breaking up a little bit there, Jake. Just wanted to let you know.
Oh, okay. I'll try to. Am I coming in better now?
A little bit, yeah.
Okay. I guess I can some of what I said. Basically, I'm in agreement that with what you said, there's definitely an advantage to having enhancement talent, just because you don't spend a lot of time degrading the people in the mid-card who you also expect to eventually break out or carry other feuds down the card where you want them to be, you know, to have some credibility. So, yeah, I think it's time, you know, to maybe revisit, their approach to the way they book main events, and hopefully, you know, the actual show main event can be a bit of a guidepost as to where they can go as far as production on their other shows to make their main event matches and even the mid card matches feel like a bigger deal.
It's 2 hours of SmackDown. Did the show go fast for you this week? I didn't cover, obviously, but did the show go fast for you?
Yeah, I thought it was a reasonably quick-passing show. I didn't have any moments where I looked at the clock and just kind of dreaded how much time I had left. So it was a well-paced show, but it just didn't have a whole lot going on.
yeah, fun show, entertaining show, but not a particularly effective show in the sense of advancing storylines. Would that be a fair way to describe it?
Yeah, I'm with you there.
So definitely check it out if you haven't done so. It was a pretty good show this week, and Jake and I will be back next week for another audio review of WWE SmackDown. Until then, thank you guys so much for listening. Got to point out again, you really, if you're not a .NET member, if you're listening on the All Access side, getting it through iTunes, thank you for listening, but now's the time to consider signing up again as a .NET member. We've got a great sale going on. Take $6 off, whether you sign up for a six-month or a one-year plan. All you need to do is head over to ProWrestling.net, and at the very top of the page, you'll see the link to how to get in on that level. Again, you'll have access to all the audio we do each week, the ad-free version of the site, the .NET member forum, and the .NET member blog section. Jake, anything you want to add before we get out of here?
No, man, I think you covered everything. Everybody have a good rest of the weekend, and we'll catch you next week.
All right, guys, that's right. We'll catch you here back here next week. Here's another WWE SmackDown audio review. Until then, everyone have a great weekend, and take care.